Welcome to Regulate and Rewire, an anxiety and depression podcast where we discuss the things I wish someone would have taught me earlier in my healing journey. I'm your host, Amanda Armstrong, and I'll be sharing my steps, my missteps, client experiences, and tangible research-based tools to help you regulate your nervous system, rewire your mind, and reclaim your life. Thanks for being here. Now let's dive in. Hey friend, welcome back. Today we are going to talk about movement and its foundational role in our well-being. This is our second episode in our Essential 8 series where we are taking a deep dive into Rise's WEAS, 8 essential and research-supported lifestyle habits that regulate our nervous system and play a critical role in anxiety and depression symptoms. And my hope with this and each of these conversations isn't to just spit out the same generic recommendations of exercise is good for depression, exercise makes your mental health better, but to provide a more well-rounded and supported conversation around the basic science and guidelines to each of these habits, and then to offer helpful suggestions on ways to not just know that you might need to move more or differently, but to actually help you start figuring out what that might uniquely look like for you. And if you've been listening for a while, you know that movement and exercise is a huge piece of my background. I spent over a decade as a personal trainer. I was a competitive athlete before running Rise's WEAS full time. I worked at Google headquarters in California in their corporate wellness space. My role there was as a health and fitness specialist. I did a lot of personal training. I ran some pilot studies that looked at the overlap between movement and mental health. So movement is a particular guru space of mine. I also feel like I've gained a unique perspective in the last few years, specifically around what it looks like to go from being very sedentary back into movement, because when I was a personal trainer, I had been somebody who had spent all of my life being active. I'd never had to like make this fitness come back. I never had to establish fitness habits for the first time. And then after a lot of health things and just life things, I spent almost 2 years not consistently exercising, and only recently have really stepped back into that habit on a consistent basis, moving up some of that intensity, and really feeling that this can be a hard thing. I don't think I ever really understood how hard having and exercising consistently could be in somebody's life who either hadn't done that for a long time or maybe had never had that habit in the first place. So also coming back into just that compassion role of changing our habits is hard. And I think people underestimate the mental load that often can go into establishing new habits. And that is my hope with this whole series, is that I can maybe cut through some of that mental load. I can share with you what the research says in just a really accessible way, offer some suggestions. So you don't necessarily have to figure out, well, how much and what type and where and how. I might be able to point you in that direction. So when it comes to movement, I think second only to sleep, movement is one of the most fundamental and non-negotiable habits for our brain health. And research shows that even just a daily 30-minute walk strengthens connections between our brain circuits that are important for emotional processing, problem solving, decision making, memory. And I'm going to just jump into a pretty blunt start today and say that there's a set of minimal physical activity guidelines for a reason. And if we are not meeting those minimum guidelines, then we're going to have problems. We should expect that we are going to have problems, one of which is our mental health suffers, our brain health suffers. I think sometimes the most value is found in the obvious. A lot of really, really smart people all around the world have put together a set of minimal physical activity guidelines, because our body is designed to move. The healthiest version of your brain lives inside a body in motion. So let's take a minute and talk about what these minimum guidelines are. Now, I live in the United States, so I'm most familiar with the CDC guidelines for physical activity. But in prepping for this conversation, I also looked up recommendations in the UK, Ghana, India, China, Australia, the World Health Organization. And what it boils down to is that adults should be active most days, preferably every day. Again, this shouldn't be surprising. Bodies are designed to move. Our biology is not meant for the sedentary way that we live in modern day society. And we're given really simple minimum guidelines of each week, adults need 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity. So that's about 2.5 hours of moderate intensity physical activity and at least 2 days a week of muscle strengthening activity. So that could be done in a number of ways. I will likely refer to it as strength training or weightlifting. There's also a note here that you can, alternatively to the 150 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity, you also could do just 75 minutes of vigorous activity to meet that minimum standard. And I know there are some of you who just heard those guidelines and mentally checked out from the rest of this conversation, either because number one, you are already hitting them, or number two, you are so far away from hitting them that you maybe have already decided it's not even possible. You are doomed. You're never going to get there. And to both those groups, I encourage you to keep listening because I have some things for each to consider. Now, hitting these minimum guidelines can look a million different ways. So if you are not currently very active, a practical way of thinking about this is 150 minutes is equivalent to, of this moderate intensity physical activity, is equivalent to a 21-minute brisk walk or something similar a day. I think it is well within the realm of us understanding that it makes sense that our body needs at least 20 minutes of intentional movement a day. But if you're going to opt for that 75 minutes of intense and vigorous activity, that's 11 minutes a day. So you can hit this minimum standard of physical activity with a 21-minute moderate intensity brisk walk or 11 minutes a day of going for a run, cycling, interval training, whatever feels like vigorous to you. And then mixing in at least 2 days of strength training. Now, my hope in laying it out that way is that more of you are, oh, okay, 20 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day, 11 minutes a day. I can make that happen. There may be some of you who are like, but like what? I've never done strength training before. What does 2 days of strength training look like? And obviously you can do more than this. And most of us benefit from doing more than this. But as a minimum standard, we've got to make 20 minutes in most of our days for intentional movement. And start where you are. Start where you are with what you have and know that doing any physical activity is better than doing none. But our bodies need to move. Our brains need our bodies to move. And if we want to take our mental health seriously, then we have to take our physical health seriously. Physical activity is also one of the most researched alternative interventions for anxiety and depression. And a recent massive review paper, which I will link in the show notes, found that physical activity is 150% more effective at reducing depression, psychological stress, and anxiety than medication or cognitive behavior therapy. I want to pause for a second before I talk a little bit more about this research study because I think this generic offering of like, oh, well, you're struggling with your mental health, like you should just go exercise, that either A, it's just an easy thing to do. If somebody is struggling with depression, asking them to get up and go to the gym or to get out and go for a walk or go for a run is a much larger ask than you can possibly understand if you aren't somebody who has sat in the lows of depression. And so I think this generic offering of, well, exercise is good for your mental health can be really shaming and hard to be offered if you are in a season of suffering. To counter this, I also think that offering it as this kind of like cure-all. Well, there's this research study that shows that exercise is 150% more effective than meds or talk therapy doesn't necessarily mean that for you specifically or the person that you're talking to specifically, that exercise is what I sometimes call the hinge intervention, the intervention that really helps you to see a increase in well-being, a decrease in symptoms, is the hinge habit right now. The same as I shared last week. We have a number of clients who absolutely hit the recommendation for sleep quantity and quality and are still struggling. There are millions and millions of people who have exercise as a healthy and regular part of their daily practice and still struggle with anxiety or depression. And so what this series is designed to offer is, hey, all of these things have a role to play. And you may have many of these dialed in and still be struggling. Okay, what does that tell us? That might tell us that there is a time now for some of the deeper work. Maybe it is that we need to step into talk therapy and go to those places and see what we can untangle and unwind. It might be that even though you are physically active, you may be so disembodied that you need to work in a somatic capacity to really bring yourself into compassionate and safe communication. If you don't feel safe in your body, you're not going to feel safe anywhere. And I know for me, some of the times in my life where I competed at the highest level, it took a measure of actual dissociation from my body to get it to perform at that high of a level. And so a big part of my healing journey has actually been stepping into quieter connection with my body, slower movements, being in stillness and in presence with my body instead of always being with intense levels of movement or physical activity. So maybe now the time is to step into a world of somatic healing and embodiment and figuring out how to create a softer sense of safety there. What I am presenting in these habit-based episodes is not here is the magic pill, here is the magic fix. What I am sharing is these are all pillars of health. These all have a role to play. And what I think far too often happens is that we fragment the mind and body when we are healing things like anxiety and depression. We think, oh, okay, I'm going to go to talk therapy to work on my thoughts. Ooh, I'm going to go to the doctor to work on my body, or oh, I'm going to go exercise. Mental health is physical health, and physical health is mental health. And what I want to really point out with today's conversation is just to pull a seat up at the table that has the label on it, movement. Are you hitting these minimum guidelines for movement? And if you are not, that is a really supportive place to start that is going to help increase your physiological capacity. It's going to offer space for your nervous system to maybe discharge some unneeded survival energy. It's going to invite a shutdown nervous system into mobility and moving. And that gets to look a number of different ways for each individual. And so as I share these things, please don't hear just one more person telling you that you need to exercise for your mental health. What I hope you hear is one more person reiterating that exercise is and movement is essential for your mental health. And that gets to look how it needs to look for you. That gets to take as long as it takes for you, with this encouragement that oftentimes when our capacity is low, we need forms of support. We may need help to engage in movement, and that's okay. Now, when it comes to this review paper, the lead scientist, Dr. Ben Singh, stated that, quote, physical activity is known to help improve mental health, yet despite the evidence, it has not been widely adopted as a first-choice treatment. Our review shows that physical activity interventions can significantly reduce symptoms of depression and anxiety in all clinical populations. Higher intensity exercise had greater improvements for depression and anxiety. Also found that all types of physical activity and exercise were beneficial, including aerobic exercises like walking, resistance training, Pilates, and yoga. And this is echoed by Dr. John Rady, who is the author of the book Spark, which I highly recommend if you want to look more into movement and mental health. And he states, quote, exercise is the single most powerful tool you have to optimize your brain function. Exercise has a profound impact on cognitive abilities and mental health. It is simply one of the best treatments we have for most psychiatric problems. End quote. One of the most common beliefs that I hear in the mental health space is that depression is caused by a chemical imbalance in your brain. Now, this was debunked over a decade ago. We've addressed this in past episodes and will again in the future, I'm sure. But what I want to point out here is that absolutely, yes, our neurotransmitters, our brain chemicals play a role in how we feel, but you are the chemist. You are the chemist of these chemical communications, and do not let anybody tell you that it is a fixed trait. I can go on a run right now and boost my dopamine, serotonin, and norepinephrine levels, or I can spend the next 2 days in my basement gaming or scrolling on social media and depress and completely decrease all of them. We can absolutely have optimal or suboptimal balancing of chemicals in our brain and body, but in so many ways, you are the chemist. When somebody is told and led to believe that I am this way, I came this way, it really sticks you with this fixed mindset and it chops off your potential to take steps towards healing because you wonder what's the point? I just am this way. And what I want to reemphasize loud and clear here is that anxiety and depression are not fixed traits, nor are they genetically predetermined. And there's a big difference between genetically predisposed and this belief that you may be genetically predetermined for something. And think about it this way. If I knew that I was genetically predisposed to diabetes, I have two choices. I can either, number one, accept my fate, or number two, take extra care to live a life that protects me against that. Physical activity plays a critical role in prevention, management, and healing of anxiety and depression. And another researcher on that review project concluded, quote, "We hope this review will underscore the need for physical activity, including structured exercise interventions." And I emphasize that for a reason. I want to come back to that. "Including structured exercise interventions as a mainstay approach for managing depression and anxiety." So again, it is not enough for a therapist, for a practitioner, for a friend, for somebody to look at you and say, well, exercise is good for your mental health. That generic advice can often feel more discouraging than helpful. And yet it is true. The one part of that that I want to highlight is this idea of structured exercise interventions. Far too often, physicians, therapists, other practitioners simply offer loose suggestions, generic guidelines. Behavior change is hard, especially when you're struggling with anxiety or depression. And so one of my goals with my RISE membership is to create support and resources that make it as easy as possible to step into more regulated living. For example, one of the resources inside the RISE membership is a daily 27-minute workout. And these workouts change every single month to keep you engaged. And if you hit play on that 27 minutes 5 days a week, you are hitting more than that minimum guideline. You're getting a mix of cardio, strength training, mobility work, and yoga. And the idea behind including this in this membership is that we do give mental and physical health this equal seat at the table. We realize and we recognize how important our physical health is in our mental health. And to create this resource that is this, quote, structured exercise intervention. And one thing that's been really cool for us to see is that we have had more and more therapists recommending that their clients join our RISE membership to provide a lot of those guided practices and tools to support the work that they're doing in session. So instead of just saying, you know, have you tried exercising? It might be great if you found a workout program. They're able to say, hey, exercise may be something to consider. Here's some of the research around that. And I have a resource for you. I have an exercise program that I know puts an emphasis on mental health versus weight loss and summer bodies and other things that can exist in a toxic fitness world. And I'll be the first to tell you that there's nothing particularly special about my 30-minute workouts. Other than for our members, it becomes a no-brainer. They open up their app, they hit play, and they just follow along and work out with me for 30 minutes. So it builds in the sense of community and fun and support. You can likely find some kind of fitness class for free on YouTube that you enjoy or at least don't totally hate. But one of the things that our members find the most helpful is coming in and getting that personalized support when it comes to engaging in movement in a different way in their life, asking the questions of, you know, how where to start, how can I utilize that resource in a way that best meets where I am right now. And for some of you listening, today may not be the day for you to all of a sudden jump right into a 30-minute daily workout, but what can you start doing today to be more intentional about the way that you are engaging in movement? Can today be the day that you go for a short walk? Can today be the day that you curiously hit play on one of those workouts with permission to stop anytime? Can today be the day that you take your kids to the park and you choose to stand or walk around instead of sitting on the bench? There is no universal right way to do this. Movement gets to look unique to you, and it is often so much easier to step into a new habit when there is structure, when there is some measure of accountability and guidance. Now, at the beginning of this conversation, I acknowledged two groups of people. There's the group of people who need to move more, and then there are those of you listening who are already meeting that minimum standard, some of you far exceeding it. And to those of you, I want you to consider if the way that you are moving is the most supportive for regulating your nervous system in this season of your healing. And I'm not going to go too deep into that chat here, but instead I want to point you towards two past episodes that have that conversation. So one really recently was just a couple episodes ago, episode 57, titled "Are Cold Plunges and HIIT Training Hurting Your Healing?" And in that conversation, I talk about how when my system was the most activated and anxious, the most comfortable with chaos and intensity, I also chose movement that mirrored that. Really intense yoga classes, CrossFit. And I talk about how that may or may not have been the most supportive movement choice for me during that season of my healing in the ways that it already exasperated a pretty intensely activated physiological state. I also want to point you towards episode 18, which is titled "What is Exercise-Induced Anxiety and How to Stop It?" So if you are somebody who experiences more anxiety when trying to exercise, or maybe you had a panic attack the last time you tried to take a spin class, that is a really great conversation to check out. Now, what I want to bring this back to is finding value in the obvious, that your body is designed to move. And if you aren't hitting the regular minimum guidelines for physical activity, it makes sense that there's a lack of wellness in your life. Sitting too much or moving too intensely, because overexercising can also be problematic, signal a lack of safety to our body and break things down in different ways. There can be a lot of nuance and personalization needed when it comes to creating an exercise routine. But for most of us, it doesn't have to be that complicated. General physical activity guidelines that apply to most, if not all of us, are 30 minutes. 30 minutes of structured, heart-pumping physical activity 5 days a week, making sure that at least two of those days include some strength training. 30 minutes, 5 days a week to take care of and intentionally increase the capacity and the strength of your home. This body is your home. This is the thing that you have to get you through your 100 years. Too many of us have been led to tie exercise to weight loss or a particular high achievement when it comes to sports. What does it look like to begin to lovingly turn towards your body? And to see this as something worth caring for, worth strengthening. And doing that intentionally 30 minutes, 5 days a week is a pretty realistic ask. Three other general guidelines to consider is spend less time sitting. What can I do in filtering your days through? How can I spend less time sitting? 10,000 steps a day or something equivalent. And stay flexible, stay mobile. Take care of your muscles, your joints, your tissues. And if hearing guidelines stresses you out, then for a minute, forget them and just simply make it your goal to sit less and walk or stretch more, even 5 minutes a day. Start where you are, moving just 1% closer to your ideal at a time. Remembering that there is no rush. The goal is consistency and sustainability. It doesn't matter whether you get to your goal habit in 3 months or 3 years, because the idea is that you are establishing a habit that you can maintain for life. And the last thing I want to share with you before we jump into our three takeaways from this conversation is an excerpt from a research paper that found that a 20 to 40 minute walk just 3 times a week for 6 weeks had a clinically significant impact of alleviating overall symptoms of depression, greater than the other two groups in the study, which I think were a social support group and a control, so a no intervention group. And the excerpt I want to read for you is from the summary section, and it reads, "The mechanisms underlying the antidepressant effect of exercise remain in debate. However, the efficacy of exercise in decreasing symptoms of depression has been well established. Data regarding the positive mood effects of exercise involvement, independent of fitness gains, suggests that the focus should be on frequency of exercise rather than duration or intensity until the behavior has been well established." And I want to tease this apart for just a couple more minutes. That first part of the mechanism underlying the antidepressant effect of exercise remain in debate. And my personal opinion is that it will remain in debate for many, 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 many more years to come, if not forever, because I don't think there is a singular underlying mechanism. Think about exercise. We have the physiological benefits. It shifts our hormones, it changes the chemicals in our mind and in our body, and then we have the way that our brain responds to movement. We have the way that our body engages in more physical vibrancy. When it comes to this particular study, when you're going on a walk outside, and this is why I think starting building a movement habit with just a simple daily walk is a really incredible place to start, because when you understand anxiety and depression through a nervous system lens, you understand that anything that contributes to overall well-being decreases the stress load on our nervous system. And there are certain things that we can do with our visual system, with our breath system, that also felt sense of safety. Now, when you aren't going on a walk outside, you are engaging in panoramic viewing. So your peripheral vision is engaged, you're looking laterally side to side, you're engaging in distance viewing. All of those things signal a sense of safety. If you don't have headphones in, you're also likely hearing birds chirping and sounds around you. That also signals a sense of, you know, connection and safety. When we are outside, we're getting natural sunlight, fresh air. Imagine you're also working on breathing mechanics and you are focused on deep, slow nasal breaths while you're on this walk. All of these things help to facilitate a greater sense of well-being and more nervous system regulation. And so with that particular part of the summary, it just has me chuckle, because we can sit here in a laboratory and debate all the time. And my clients know I say this all the time. I don't actually care if we know why it works. If it works, let's go ahead and keep doing it. Which leads us to the second part of that sentence, which says the efficacy of exercise in decreasing symptoms of depression has been well established. We know that movement for depression, and there's other research studies that show movement for anxiety, it works. It's well established. That's no longer up for debate. And then let's have a little bit of a conversation around that second sentence. Data regarding the positive mood effects of exercise involvement, independent of fitness gains. What would it look like if we were able to tease out mental health from moving for our physical health? Now, we know that those things are the same. Mental health and physical health, they contribute and they work back and forth with each other. But I think we also can all recognize the reality of a pretty toxic fitness culture, especially in the age of social media when it's so easily up in your face all the time. I think for me especially, I'm somebody who spent a long, long time in the fitness industry as a personal trainer. I felt like my body was a business card, and now I'm just in a very different season of life where my body's doing a very different job in growing humans, recovering from that, really trying to be at an optimal health for this season of my life. And it has felt really empowering for me to build an exercise habit independent of fitness gains. And it was really hard for me to get here. For a long time, I just avoided kind of exercise altogether, because whenever I would exercise, there would be this part of me that was like, well, you used to be able to, this didn't used to be hard. And until I really was able to do some of that inner work and say, you know what, this movement is for my mental health. This movement is for my overall well-being. And I gave it a different purpose. This movement isn't so that you can compete in a track competition. This movement isn't so that you can be the strongest person at your powerlifting competition. This movement is to move because you and your body deserve that. And then the final part that I want to add a couple more comments on is where it says the focus should be on frequency of exercise rather than duration or intensity until the behavior has been well established. And this is everything that we talked about a couple weeks ago in the episode on behavior change. We want to install tiny habits. If you have a goal to get out on a daily walk and you are starting from ground zero, that is not something that you are currently engaging in. What would it look like if you just said, okay, I am going to put my shoes on and go to the end of my driveway and back? And I actually did this with a client not very long ago who had for months and months, possibly even almost a year, had a goal of going on a morning walk. And she's like, I need to go, or I want to go on this 20 to 30 minute walk every single morning. And I know that when I had that habit in the past, my anxiety was lower. And we kind of walked it back to that 1%, to that tiny habit. We set out a habit ladder. What is your current habit? What is your optimal habit? And that where we landed was the make it smaller, make it smaller, make it smaller. What's the 1% habit? Was putting on her shoes and going to her mailbox, which was at the end of the driveway and back. And she was like, Amanda, that doesn't matter. It's not going to make a difference. And I said, just trust me, because I want to know, how is it working trying it your way? She's like, well, it's obviously not. I set this goal many months ago. I said, okay, what if we just try it my way? And what if you're actually not allowed to do any more than that? Put your shoes on, go to the driveway and back. That's it. Every morning making a habit of that. And she kind of chuckled, but she said, okay, right? We're also adding an element of play into this. And we did that for about 10 days. And then I said, okay, how's that going? She goes, it's easy. Because even when I wake up and I'm tired, even when I wake up and I'm frustrated and I don't want to do it, I'm like, oh, I'll check the mail later. I have this thought of, well, it's only to the end of the driveway and back. And I said, perfect. That's where we want to be. I said, okay, so does that happen pretty automatically now? She's like, yeah, I just get up, put my shoes on. I don't even think about it. I said, okay, what does it look like to now go down the block and back? And where we were was that within 2 months, she was consistently getting up and going on about a 20-minute walk every single morning. It took us 2 months to establish a habit that she, for at least 6, if not almost a year, months prior, had tried to establish. And it's because we started small. You need to choose a version of the habit that you want that is so small that even on some of your worst mental health days, you think, oh, okay, it's only a minute, or oh, okay, it's only X, Y, or Z. I can probably do that. And as you step into that tiny habit, that builds self-trust, that builds self-efficacy. Once that becomes habitual, then you can optimize and build on that habit. And so if you are not engaging in any movement right now, what would it look like for you to say, okay, put my shoes on, go to the end of my driveway and back, and do that for 2 weeks? And if even that feels too big, then maybe that multi-step process of putting on your shoes and getting out is too hard, and we engage in just a little bit of movement still in your pajamas when you wake up in the morning. There are so many ways to workshop behavior change to meet you where you are. But the bottom line here is that we need to move. We need to move. Our brains need us to move. Our bodies need us to move. Our families need us to move. Our communities need us to move. That is a pillar of health that when it is not well established, we can expect ourselves to be unwell. All right. Our 3 takeaways from this conversation around movement is, number 1, movement is essential for physical and mental health. If you aren't consistently hitting the minimum guidelines for physical activity, then we can't be surprised when we aren't optimally well. Number 2, if you already have a consistent habit of movement and exercise, then the next question to consider might be if the type of movement you are doing most is optimally or suboptimally supporting your goal of healing and regulating your nervous system. And number 3 is, what can you do today? Asking yourself, what can I do today to make movement a more integral part of my daily life and my healing plan? movement is a cornerstone habit that heals. And if you are looking for more support in stepping into that habit or any other aspect of regulating your nervous system or more regulated living, I would love for you to join us inside my Rise membership, where you can find those tangible tools, weekly personalized support, and those group coaching calls to step into a life full of habits that heal and into a community that wants to celebrate while also holding you gently accountable in the process. And one final reminder that I have created a mini workbook that I will link in the show notes that outlines a lot of what we talked about today and provides you with that habit ladder and other resources to dive a little bit deeper into the connection between movement and mental health. This is also an invitation to join me over on Instagram, where each week in this series, I am going to do my best to have additional conversations about movement or sleep or vagal toning, whatever it is that week. But join me over on Instagram, where we are going to talk more about movement this week. And thanks for being here, friend. Sending so much hope, healing, and movement your way this week. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Regulate and Rewire podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review to help us get these powerful tools out to even more people who need them. And if you yourself are looking for more personalized support in applying what you've learned today, consider joining me inside Rise, my monthly mental health membership and nervous system healing space, or apply for our one-on-one anxiety and depression coaching program, Restore. I've shared a link for more information to both in the show notes. Again, thanks so much for being here, and I'll see you next time.